right? All right. So anyway, I've heard some wonderful messages and stories about people giving to God and how it was the right time and how it blessed people. I've also heard some horrible stories about pastors manipulating people and making them give and then going on vacation with the giving money and stuff. That's a real story, everybody. I'm not making that up. So I just come with like a little bit of trembling as I come to this passage. The one thing is, I didn't choose this passage. It was just the next one in line for what we're doing. So that was that's one of the nice things about this. So once again, I come recognizing that a pastor talking about giving has its pitfalls. At the same time, this last week, I actually had a number of really meaningful conversations with some of you in the congregation about giving and about what that has meant in their own lives and what that has meant for the church and how that has transformed even the way that they see them. As well as, like I said, I had a couple of meetings. Again, when you come with the elders, when you come to a passage like this, even in our elder meeting, I was like, wait, what do you guys think we need to hear as a congregation about giving? To have coffee with a friend, what do you think we need to hear about giving? To talk with someone who's a long-standing member at the church, what do you think our congregation needs to hear? Even our staff, like, what has been your experience with them? And so I feel like this is really good this morning as we kind of open and see what was going on today, as well as then what does that mean for us today. I'll also be preaching to myself. Obviously, we are in a world. We talked about the Corinthians, that they lived in a city that was preoccupied with making the deal and earning income and rising in social standing. And we recognize that's not too far off from where we're at today. And what we recognize is that what the Apostle Paul is going to say is the cure for that preoccupation is generosity. The cure for a preoccupation with money is actually generosity. It's giving it out and not hoarding it in scarcity. So if you have your Bibles, let's open up. We're going to be in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, but we're going to start in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 so we understand where we're going with this. And what we understand is that the background of this, when we hear this passage, a really famous passage about giving, you might have heard it a number of times even spoken in church, or when somebody does want people to give, they oftentimes go to this passage. But why is this passage here? And the answer to that is that the Apostle Paul, as he plants churches in the Gentile world, that is in Asia Minor or modern-day Turkey, in Greece, in Rome, in other areas, in Syria, as he's planting these churches, what he's going to do is, as he plants churches, he's going to take a collection that he's going to then take back to Jerusalem to the churches that are in Jerusalem that are a little bit less well off, a little more poor, a little more oppressed, a little more ostracized in their communities, and he's going to take a gift from these Gentile churches that he's planted and take it back. And that is the occasion on which he is writing this. Look at chapter 8 and verse 1. We want you to know, brothers and sisters, about the grace of God that has been given among the churches of Macedonia. Now, Macedonia is northern Greece. We're going to hear about Achaia. Achaia is southern Greece. Macedonia is northern Greece, and there are a number of churches in northern Greece. What's one of the churches in northern Greece in Macedonia? Those of you who love maps, though, this is like Bible trivia Jeopardy. I'll take northern Macedonian churches for 500, Alex. So what is one church in a well-known church in northern Greece? Thessaloniki. That's one church. That's one city. What's another city in that? And they have a couple books in the Bible. Yeah, go ahead. Berea is also, yes, if I had gold stars, I would be giving them out. You could put them in the front of your Bible. This would be awesome. One more, they have a book of the Bible, Northern Church, Northern Greece. Philippi, I heard that. It was quiet, but sure, right? Okay, Philippi, Thessalonica, and Berea, those are the Macedonian churches. Now listen to what he says about them. He goes, the grace of God that has been given among the churches of Macedonia. For in a severe test of affliction, their abundance of joy and their extreme poverty have overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part. For they gave according to their means, as I can testify, even beyond their means, of their own accord, begging us earnestly for the favor of taking part of the relief of the saints. And so what he's saying is that these northern churches in Greece, Macedonia, Philippi, Thessalonica, Berea, they want to take part of whatever this gift is that's going back to Jerusalem. They don't have a ton of money. That was, northern Greece was not the political or the kind of commerce center of the city, of the nation, really. It was down in like Athens and Corinth where the big money flowed through, okay? So, but these folks were even like, hey, even though we don't have a lot, you think about Philippi had Lydia, the seller of purple cloth. She was probably well-to-do. But then you had this Philippian jailer who came to faith. And then you had this slave girl that came to faith. Like, talk about a really interesting mix. And so you have these people who don't have a lot of money. And they're like, hey, we still want to give. And so Paul says in 8:5, and this we, not as we expected, but they gave themselves first to the Lord and then by the will of God to us. So these people loved the Lord and what he was doing, particularly through Paul, so they wanted to give. So, and that is what Paul does. He gets this on his second and third missionary journeys in particular. He makes a collection that he's going to take back to Jerusalem, okay? And there are several reasons why he might do it. So a little bit, why would Paul want to take this collection? First and foremost, we had already talked about it. The Jerusalem church was poor and had many material needs that needed to be covered because they were right in the center of persecution. They were Jewish believers in Messiah in the place where Jesus was killed, and that did not go over well in Jerusalem. So they were kind of ostracized. But the second is this. The Jerusalem church was where the gospel originated. This was the mothership. This was where it all began. And so part of this is them showing a deference to the Jerusalem church. And part of what they did was they would give toward that church. One other reason why, and I think this is really interesting too, as you read passages in the Old Testament that talked about the Messiah, and when the Messiah came, the Messiah was going to do a number of things. And in Isaiah and Micah, one of the things that it talked about is that when the Messiah came, that he would gather Israel back into Israel, and he would gather the Gentiles as well back into Israel, and they would bring offering and tribute to Israel. And so one of the things that maybe Paul is doing here is he's saying, hey, look, what I'm going to do, I want your church to put together a gift and pick out three people from Philippi, from Berea, from Thessaloniki, and let's all travel together as a means of offering. God has reached the Gentiles, and let's show up in Jerusalem with this wonderfully abundant gift to give to show we have partnership with you, and God is reaching the world. And that's probably what Paul is doing here with this collection. It's not just about enriching himself or enriching the Jerusalem church. There's something more significant that's going on. It's a sign that God is reaching the world, and that the world, the Gentiles, are in partnership with the Jews in order to do all of this. And so that's some of the background of why Paul is doing this. Now look in chapter 9, verse 1, okay? 9:1. So after he then talks about, well, Titus has come, and that's been wonderful, in 9:1 he says, well, it's actually superfluous for me to write to you about the ministry for the saints. So he's already said, look, we've already talked about this gift. For I know your readiness, of which I boast about you to the people of Macedonia, saying that Achaia has been ready to give since last year, and your zeal has stirred up most of them. So we talked about this. Macedonia is northern Greece. Achaia is southern Greece. The two main city centers there are Athens and Corinth. And there's all kinds of cities all around that, but those are the two major cities. So when he talks about Achaia has been ready, Corinth seems to be the hub of the Jesus movement in southern Greece at the time. And it seems this, that the Corinthians, on a previous journey, Paul had let them know about the gift. Like, hey, I'm going to be gathering this up. And they were like, hey, when the time comes, we're in. We want to do this. We're ready. He talks about this idea. You said you were ready for this. And now, again, all of that is we're going to be collecting this in the future, but you had said you are ready. And so what he says, and well, when Paul told all those churches in northern Greece that even the Corinthians, those pagans, the Corinthians, we talked about that even in a licentious culture like the Roman culture, Corinth had even gained a reputation of even being more licentious. But when you go up to Philippi and Thessalonica and Berea and say, hey, even the Corinthians said they want a piece of this action. They want to get in on this. And what he then says is that it increased, it stirred up their own zeal. Oh, even the Corinthians want this? Even the Corinthians want to give? Like the Corinthians want to give. They don't just want to earn, they want to give. And that then stirred up the Macedonians to say, okay, well, we're on this. We are going to go for this. So it pumped them up. In my words, what it did is it pumped them up, right? The Macedonians. So the issue is this. So here's the deal. They had said earlier, we want to give. Paul told the Macedonians, they want to give. They got excited. They put together their resources. In the ancient world, here's the issue. Liquid cash was not as easy to come by. People oftentimes held their wealth in assets, whether it be land or flocks or crops. Most of the assets that people held were not in kind of traveling coinage that you could take places. So for the Corinthians, in order to take part in this, to be ready to do this, they would have to liquidate some assets in order to have cash or coinage. It wasn't like you could just do a bank transfer, right? It wasn't that you could just like go to the ATM and pull out paper bills. You had to get actual bags of gold to be ready when this gift was being collected. And so in 9:3, listen to what he says. But I am sending the brothers, the people who delivered 2 Corinthians, so that our boasting about you may not prove empty in this matter, so that you may be ready. In other words, so that you can gather up your gift that you said you were going to give, you can gather it up. And we don't, otherwise, 9:4, if some Macedonians come with me, if I just show up and find that you're not ready, then it would be humiliating. It would be like I had said it wouldn't be trustworthy. So I'm going to send this pre-party down. They're going to get you ready so that when I show up with the Macedonians who are all excited about your giving, you're ready to say, we're here with you. Here's our gift. Let's go to Jerusalem. So that's what he's doing. So what he's going to do, Paul wants this to be a point of celebration, not a surprise. So he said, I think this is interesting because this sounds a lot like giving today. So I thought it necessary to urge the brothers to go ahead of you and arrange in advance for the gift that you had promised so that you may be ready as a willing gift and not as an exaction. Not like he was coming down like a mob enforcer and it's like, it's time to pay, right? It's time to pay. He didn't want that to be the case at all. So he's like, I want you to be ready. I'm sending these guys down early and then I'll be right behind them with the delegation from Philippi and Thessalonica and Berea. All right, that's the situation of what's going on. So as they're getting ready, as they're putting together, and they said, yes, we said we would support this, how much should we give? That is the context for what we had read, what Marcia read for us today. So that's the preamble, guys. That's what's going on. And then what Paul is going to do is he's going to give some teaching on the nature of making a decision about how much to give. You guys with me so far? That's what the rest of this passage is about. And my plan this morning is simply to walk through Paul's guidance to the Corinthians and make some observations as it might relate to us and how God has blessed us and the way that we give the resources that are given to us. I'll also make some comments about how giving to the Lord in our day and age and how we can support kingdom work and how, even as well, that emboldens even our work here at Taft Avenue Community Church. All right. So here's our first thing. And in your notes, This is the note. It says, giving as a planned act of generosity. Paul begins with a proverb-like statement. Look at 9:6. And this is what kind of governs the entirety of his teaching. I think if there's nothing else that you get out of this message, just remembering what Paul says here is probably enough. Because it's not about a charge to give. It's about a way of thinking about the world. And this is what he says. The point is this. Whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. And whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Now, the Corinthians, they were merchant. It was a sailing city. These were ports. There were a lot of merchants there. But the overall region was agricultural. This was, him saying this is not a surprise. They already knew this. If I sow 10 seeds of grain, I might get 100 heads of grain out of that. If I sowed 100 heads of grain, I might, or 100 seeds of grain, I might get 1,000 heads of grain out of that. If I sowed 1,000 seeds of grain, I might get 10,000. So the principle is that the amount of giving grows exponentially as you give. Whoever sows sparingly will reap, certainly it will increase, but it will be a sparing increase. And whoever sows a lot, there will be a major increase. And so this idea, what he's trying to say, whether it's grain, olives, grapes, this is Greece, so think about those kind of products. This is what they know in business. And they know if you plant small, you will harvest small. These are merchants. If you plant big, you will harvest big. And Paul is going to take this well-known truth from the world of commerce and trade and apply it to their giving to God. And the way this sounds in Greek, it sounds like this. Whoever sows sparingly, sparingly he will reap. And whoever sows generously, generously he will reap. And there's the first thing that Paul wants to remind them of, and kind of the overarching thing, is that they live in God's world, which is a world of abundance. They live in a world of abundance. And what we find is that it is God's generosity. Well, first of all, the abundance that God gives them, they can be generous with. But really the point of it is that it's generosity that precedes abundance. Let me give you an example of this. Not every person who has abundance is generous. Some of the most stingy people I know are people who have a ton of money. Anybody? It's like stingy. Again, I'm not decrying anybody, but sometimes just having a lot, having abundance, does not produce generosity necessarily. Generosity precedes abundance. And we know that from this passage because it is God's generosity that produces the abundance of our world and our blessings. It's not abundance by which God is generous. What comes first, the chicken or the egg? What comes first, abundance or generosity? What comes first theologically is generosity. Generosity precedes abundance. This is how I figured that out. When I graduated from college, I did a children's ministries internship. You didn't think that I did children's ministry at any time. I mean, I am pretty good with babies, though. You all witnessed that today. I don't know. I think it's more the babies than it is me. But anyway, and particularly Carter, because he's like the best ever, right? Yes. Yeah, see, I know. I thought I'd get an amen from the front couple rows on this one. Okay, but I was doing it at a church in Scottsdale, Arizona, Scottsdale Bible Church. And I was doing this internship, but I need another job. So what I did was I worked downtown parking cars for a valet down at a hotel down there. And one thing that I learned parking cars at a valet is that regardless of how awesome the car is, that is no indicator of the tip that you are going to get. And you learn this kind of the hard way because, like, You come down, these people come in, they come into this event, this hotel, and then when they're done, they come, the keys come out, and all the valets are lined up, and you get tossed a set of keys, and you're like, oh, it's a Porsche, you know, woo! You know, you're going up, and you come down, and you like totally get stiffed when you bring it around, and these people like, or they just, they're pretty sparse. It's like sparing, right, in their tip. And I remember we would always talk about this because we'd talk about these awesome cars. Now, look, I drove a lot of cool cars, and it was awesome. I loved it. I got to exercise, a lot of running. And there's a lot of adrenaline when you're doing all that, and it's awesome, okay? But I remember this one time, and I remember it was because it was the best tip I ever got. I got this set of keys, kind of no name. It was like a Toyota. Like, all right, Toyota. I'm running up. I come to this car, and I look at this car, and I look at the keys, and I look back at the car, and this car had been through the wars, everybody. You know, everybody's got one. We've got a car like that, like needs a paint job, doesn't look like it goes very far, doesn't look like it goes very fast, right? Okay, we all drove one of those, maybe in high school, maybe in college, maybe now, either way, okay? All right, so I look at this car, and I get in this car, and I come down, I pull up, and you know, I'm thinking like, okay, get to the next car. I pull up around, and I get out, and I stand by the door, and there's this really petite woman dressed business casual, smiles at me, super kind, super friendly, says thank you, and she hands me the biggest tip I ever had. Abundance does not precede generosity. It doesn't even ensure generosity. Generosity comes from God, which produces abundance. We were talking about this in our staff meeting. I was asking them, what do you think our congregation needs to know? What's been the best teaching you've ever had on giving? And one of the things that came out is that one thing I think everybody needs to know is that some of the most generous people that I know are people who do not have a lot. And that is God is the beginner of generosity. And we're going to see that what Paul wants to make it clear to the Corinthians is that you simply having a lot is not what is going to get you generous. Mirroring and basing your life on the generosity of God, that is going to move you towards giving. That is what's going to break the cycle of greed in Corinth, is you honoring God by mirroring his sensibilities and giving away what you have, as God is generous in his own abundance of giving away to you. So the first thing that Paul's going to remind them of is that they live in a world of abundance, and generosity produces abundance, not the other way around. Second thing Paul says is that each person in relation to this offering should give as they had decided, as they have planned. 9:7, each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. I think one thing that's interesting here is that giving, Paul says, people decide in their hearts. And the best giving that as I've experienced giving and people being generous, the best kind of giving is not when people feel the pressure or because it makes them look good or because they put on a show. It's simply that God has made a movement in their heart. And they have secretly and quietly, I think the better, it's not secret, it's discreetly. Somebody's going to know that you're generous, but it's discreet. It's in your heart, not on a billboard for all to see. I think this is just like what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 6. Don't let your right hand know what your left hand is doing. You give. You do it quietly. You do it discreetly. And God who sees will reward you. God who sees, who knows how to give abundantly, sees that you're giving abundantly and generously. Generosity has come, and God's like, I love generosity. The best way this happens is when someone has a conviction in their heart that this money belongs to God and it's simply in my possession for me to steward it on his behalf. Look at 9:8. It's our next point. God is, we've already alluded to this, God is the model of generous giving. The ultimate giver is God. It is his generosity that produces endurance. It is the first, it is the prime mover of any giving. Any generous giving originates in God. God in his generosity blesses people with abundance. And then out of that, what they have then is that they then turn and they give it back to God in the service of some ministry that is going on in the world. How do you give it back to God? You give it in the service of some kind of ministry or some kind of thing that's going on in the world. You steward it on God's behalf. And that we'll get to that later, but it means that you're not giving to that ministry, you're giving to God. You're giving it back to God, just as God gave it to you